The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Running the rental gauntlet, living at home, couch surfing, locked out of the housing market, these are the common cries heard with increasing frequency during the current housing crisis. But why is it so difficult to get a house or an apartment in Ireland, and what are the solutions? Well, in a new book which is called Gaffes, Dr. Rory Hearn investigates these topics, and he's with me in studio. Rory, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Liz, I just want to start very briefly, just condolences obviously to all those in Chrysler in terms of who've been affected by that awful tragedy. And the other side of what you were just talking about there, congratulations to the ladies' soccer team, incredible result. I trained to coach my daughter and her under eights in under 10s, should I say, in Merino, and they'll all be absolutely boosted by that incredible result. So well done there.
All right, now we want to talk about the housing situation. Your book is called Gaffes, which is a kind of a pun, because gaff as in house or home, but also gaff, if you stuck an E at the end of it, it would be kind of mistakes, unfortunate mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely. And the main kind of, I suppose, purpose of calling it Gaffes and was a, as a way to, I suppose, connect with people in that it's trying to move beyond seeing housing as investment or property and seeing it as a home. And people call, you know, use the lingo, it's my gaff, you know, they don't. Yeah. It's just, it's the idea of trying to move it to home. And also, of course, as you say, many unfortunate mistakes along the way that have led us to here.
Now, you go back through the history of previous governments, you go way back to the 1930s when there was, if you like, a boom time in social housing building. Your analysis of why that stopped?
Yeah, I suppose I even go back further to the tenements and fascinating, you know, reports about, you know, where did public housing come from in Ireland? And of course, it came from the failure of the private market. And my analysis of where, you know, where did it go wrong? You know, we were doing incredible in the 1950s and 60s in terms of housing. We were building social public housing. The councils were building. They were contracting private developers to build public housing on a major scale. Essentially, it really started going wrong from the 1980s, when there was economic issues, there was austerity cuts, and essentially what I would describe is that the thinking, the ideology of the market, of Margaret Thatcher's idea, you know, this attack on council housing, the idea was amongst policymakers and government and politicians was that social housing was a failed way of delivering housing, that the best way was to get everybody to be owners. And over time, you see this local authorities' capacity to deliver housing was cut. And then during the Celtic Tiger years, during the huge boom, this policy was essentially continued through, some of your listeners might be familiar, you'd be well familiar with the Part 5 of the Planning Act, which was all private developments were supposed to have 20% social housing. Developers put the squeeze on the government. They then allowed councils basically take the money instead of the housing. And what it did was it all just stopped councils building. And of course, we sold off our social housing stock.
And those were mistakes that were pointed out to councils at the time. I mean, their logic was that if you have home ownership in an area, that you get more stable communities in those areas. So the more home ownership you have, and as you sell off more of the council stock, you get a mix of those who are still renting from the council and those who own. And they say that is a more stable mix than an entire community of social housing renters. What say you to that argument?
Yeah, so I go through this in the book, the whole, you know, how we see housing and security. And for me, there's two kind of housing tenures that are generally really secure, have good communities, and they work. And they are home ownership and social housing. Like, I worked in the social housing community for 6-7 years. I saw the community, it was there. And the difficulties around social housing, what really happened was because basically it was reduced in the amount of social housing that was been delivered, less people were eligible. And so you had essentially those highest on the waiting lists, most in need, being concentrated in areas. And rather than, if you look at places like Austria, you know, Amsterdam, Vienna, where public housing is available to a mix of incomes.
Sure. But here we have put a cap on the rent of a social house.
Okay, well, so, and the cap on the income eligibility, which restricts those who are...
But you know what I mean, that when you look at social housing and people who might be well got to provide their own homes, the rents are so attractive compared to, you know, doing it yourself. Why would you ever move?
Well,
you know, to make way for someone who's still making their way and needs a social house. You now are in a social house. You could provide for yourself, but you don't, because why would you?
Well, you see, this is where there is an issue around how, again, how we approach social housing, because in other countries like Vienna, as your income increases, which it does in Ireland, you have to pay more of your income towards that rent. And I think we need the mistake we made here was a little bit of what you're asking there is we came to see social housing as this transitory response to people in extreme difficulty, rather than something that gives people permanent secure homes and that they live in and their kids live in. And there's no problem with that. It's giving them good housing. It's giving communities good housing. Yeah. But if you have it for a range of income types, you know, middle incomes, then that means you have more rent into local authorities, you have more mixed communities. And that's where I make the case in the book for, you know, affordable housing that the state would be building for sale, affordable housing for rent, like the cost rental. If the state was making mixed communities and not-for-profit bodies were making mixed communities,
I mean, the idea
that
if you're a surgeon living in Vienna, you might live in a social house, you've got a very fat income, you pay a lot of rent, then you retire, your income plummets and your rent plummets to go with it. I mean, that's a very attractive model.
It is, and I think it really works there. You know, people, you know, are proud of their public housing, proud of the housing they live in. They want to be part of these communities. And this is really kind of the big mistake we made here. This idea was that social housing was just for the very poor, that it was a failed form of housing delivery. And that's essentially where we've got to now. And we have the situation where local authorities don't have the capacity to build, and we're scrambling to try and catch up.
There is an issue, I think, with local authorities that they don't really want to be landlords insofar as they are, you know, historical landlords. They prefer to have less responsibility simply because sometimes policing social housing is quite difficult.
Yeah.
You know, no one can be evicted, no one can be thrown out unless they literally set the place on fire. So you end up with certain troublemakers in a social housing unit that spoil it for everybody else. And the councils generally seem to be incapable of dealing with those kind of problems, and they don't want more of them.
Well, it's very important to say that there is issues of antisocial behaviour in private estates as there is in social housing, and there are issues, you know, we know that, and it's not just in social housing. And I think that there is an issue with councils and management, but it does for me come back to, when you look at it, they haven't built up the expertise of managing estates. They haven't taken housing seriously. And this comes back to my bigger argument. The state itself, the Department of Housing, our government, successive governments, haven't taken their role of providing housing, of managing it, of ensuring it seriously. They've handed it all over to the market. So why local authorities haven't had the resources to ensure proper estate management, proper maintenance? There is also a role for the guards in that as well. But if we look at, there are a huge amount of successful, really successful social housing estates. Some of the more difficult areas get a lot of attention. Many of them are private estates as well. So I think there's a certain amount of that is narrative in the media, a narrative among certain...
I think you're gilding the lily a bit there.
No, I agree. Of course, I'm not denying that.
I can name, I won't name them, but I could name places. I'll name one because it's currently being rebuilt. O'Devany Gardens. I grew up beside O'Devany Gardens. It was a splendid development when it started. It's been refurbished twice in my lifetime. Come on. You know, so what was going on there?
Okay, we can get the particular...
And I could name others, by the way.
Yes, of course we can. But if you look at the roots of what happened there, and again, I've analysed this, it goes back to the 1980s. A number of economic issues emerged that at the time around, rising unemployment. There was, of course, the heroin epidemic crisis. And these communities did become hardest hit because they were becoming areas of high deprivation. It wasn't the social housing that failed. It was wider socioeconomic issues going on. And as I argued, the underfunding of local authorities.
No, but you are asking the management of a council maybe to go in and police a block that's riddled with drugs. I mean, that's not their job. Officials should not be put in harm's way.
But
so what is the solution to that
problem? As happens, is that there are two issues like that. That goes way beyond housing. That goes to wider inequalities. It goes to wider, how do we respond to addiction, to inequalities related to that? That's not about the housing. And I think that that's part of the problem. We conflated the two things. And I do agree with you. There are issues around estate management and councils. And we look at local housing associations, bodies like CLUID, Respond. They're developing estate management strategies for social housing. And I do not think that would be a real mistake, again, if we didn't build social housing, because we looked at a number of areas which
one of your
not working.
Big ideas. at the end of the book, you have a number of solutions. One is a referendum to put the right to housing in the constitution. I'm not exactly sure how that would work and who would it apply to. People born in Ireland, every asylum seeker, every refugee who comes in, anyone who fetches up, I want a house, I want a home, the state has to give it to me. How would that work?
No, so the right to housing in the constitution would be about essentially balancing the right of private property is the proposal. And it's very important. We have no right to housing in our constitution, in any of our laws or policy. And I argue this
But how would that work? Suppose you put it in the constitution.
You would have it in the constitution. That would mean then the starting point is that government would have to look at all its policies and see how is it meeting the right to housing, which is not does everybody get a home by the government, given a home by the government, and everyone gets an automatic entitlement to a home by the government. That's not what a right to housing is. A right to housing is quite explicit in the United Nations. It states that government's responsibility is to ensure that housing is affordable, accessible, and secure
now,
in tenure.
Now, you have some like lovely ambitions. One of your points is that you build 40,000 affordable homes and social green homes, 40,000 per year. And like you want to magic this up through a state construction company. Well, number one, the government would be desperately trying to meet those figures. If they could be met, they'd be doing it. Why? Because they might lose the next election if they don't. So, you know, when you ascribe a motive that they don't want to succeed, they desperately want to succeed. But they're not succeeding.
I would disagree with you here. They, and this is a point I show in the book, housing policy over the last 10 years has been about making housing more unaffordable. People go, what? Housing, making housing more unaffordable? They have allowed rents to rise. They have allowed house prices rise to this level to make property attractive for investment. And they thought their voters were the people who owned the homes who would vote for them. But now they've realised they've made a massive mistake because half of the young people of Ireland are stuck living at home with these homeowners. So they've realised they have messed up royally. Yeah. And I think that
they're about to take on the REITs, I think. But I'm not sure.
That
should have been dealt with a long time ago.
It should have been, and hopefully. But the other thing about the state construction company, we are putting $2 billion into a rainy day fund. That should be going into seed fund, the setting up of a state construction company to build and retrofit. Because I make the point, climate is the big issue.
I note
climate.
This idea because it's a big idea, a state construction company. And I'm thinking, what commercial semi-states ever did a really good job of what they were charged to do. The ESB is the only one I can think of.
The ESB, but there is one. It's done.
But they stripped that, obviously, under EU law.
Under privatisation.
But do you actually believe that a construction sector, which would all have to buy into this thing, that they would be any better at working for the government than they would be working for themselves?
I think they
would. Because I don't believe it.
No, every
state activity tends to be inefficient.
Well, I will call our schools, our hospitals are all run by public servants, teachers, nurses.
Yeah, yeah, and they're doing really well, are they, Rory?
They are doing amazing. Of course they are. They're delivering it. There are major challenges, but our public servants are doing amazing things. And I would believe, just as we have people who go out every day and run our ambulances, run our accidents and emergency services, our construction workers would be committed to delivering homes.
Rory, I we have to cut this short because I was a bit longer with the soccer than I had expected, because I didn't expect to be talking to Vera Powell. It's a fantastic book at 300 plus pages. It strikes me that, you know, you might have political ambitions, that you might run on this kind of manifesto yourself for some party.
Not at the moment, no. At the moment, I am literally trying to get these ideas out here to get change, have a national conversation about this, to see the true value of home, the real meaning of home, and to change, get people to see that and understand why we're here, that home is about giving people security, not about a property, and hopefully to make it a human right. I think that the book, I tried to make it really accessible. You know, people could read it, anyone could pick it up and look and understand why we're here and see hope in that there are solutions that could be done.
Okay, it's published by HarperCollins. It's called Gaffes, a subtitle, Why No One Can Get a House and What We Can Do About It. And its author is Dr. Rory Heron. Rory, thank you very much for joining us in the studio.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.